notes for the project.
Nothing.
I thought you were talking to me.
I'm talking to a tape recorder.
The name I've been trying to remember of a district organizer of the party is Pat Devine. Need to talk to the Jimmies people and try to reconstruct history for the District 9 of the CP through the whole region. We should be considering a comparative study of Minnesota politics with Saskatchewan and Manitoba.
Well, let's begin then.
Okay. What, you've got an hour, hour and a half?
Sure.
I better.
Lunch arrives in an hour and a half.
Well,
you know, I think you should record this because on the automatic record level, ARL.
Yeah, that's what's on there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think we were getting a smoother recording from my machine because it's ARL. There's really, I think, three questions that we should talk about. Not necessarily all of them at the same length today. I think the first of those questions is simply the general question of defining the project. Personally, I'm very anxious that we define it in broad terms which will reach beyond the narrow limits of people who are specialists in radical history, and that we can pave the way for considerably broader participation. This document here, under the heading of Purposes, Definition, and Scope, is trying to answer the question of what the project is about. And in fact, it has a title at the head of it called History of 20th Century Radicalism in Minnesota, which I think kind of gives it a very broad definition and possibly an intriguing one. The point of this should be to the whole thing is that we'd be able to launch a project successfully in the terms of its reception in the academic community, among historians, and among those radicals and others out there whom we expect to collaborate with us. It has to be kind of a broad, well-sponsored, authoritative, nonpartisan type of research project. And its goals should be those that would be shared by historians and also by the labor radical movement itself. So that's the first problem. I don't have anything to say about that otherwise, except it presented here. I think that the second part, called specific objectives, belongs with that. These are kind of a broad statement of things that we ought to accomplish. So that's, I think, the one topic. The second topic is the structure and organization of this thing. And I'm inclined to start on that today. Let's have some reaction to this first part. Mm-hmm. I think we should, if the Russ is ready, devote our main attention to the structural problem. And when we get to that, I can comment on suggestions I have, which gradually take shape in my mind, but not necessarily final even at this particular point. The third set of topics are the biggest ones and have to do with laying out the actual real content of the project. The first point I have listed here, and those 7 points at the end, is a consideration of selecting areas of special research interest, posing the questions, the topics that this project seeks to answer. And I think they need to be of such a character that they involve the different periods of they're interested in chronologically, was looking to the heart of issues concerned in given periods and events, and intriguingly posed so that they incite the interest of researchers. That relates closely to the question of developing special sub-projects so that we can make concrete the striving for the answers to some of those questions, large sub-projects and smaller ones. A large project, I think, is an inevitable one, putting together a picture of the formative years of communism in Minnesota. A second one would be looking at the whole experience of the Farmer Labor Association, its birth, its development. Other specific questions, like one I was talking about the Rust, why in the 1930s, after the Teamster strike led by the Trotskyites, did the leadership of the left become
communist?
What were the causes of that, and what do we learn from looking at all that about the history of the time? So by way of that, then we have the ethnic questions. Holly and I had a little exchange about how to delve into Jewish radicalism, a very, very difficult question to which we have to find some answers. Specific things like the history of Trotskyism, which Peter feels he has some entree to. Some specific questions relating to the question, is there a Swedish radicalism, or was there a Swedish radicalism, and if so, what was it like? Question that I think Scandinavian historians have resisted asking. So much for that. And then,
Carl, could you just dwell on that one point, just to educate me? Why is the examination of Jewish radicalism, say, more difficult than another ethnic group?
Different or difficult?
He says particularly difficult to get into to recreate the sources and to get the sources.
We have.
The problem is the dispersion of the individuals involved, death and dispersion, that those who are, that very few are still around in the area here. Individuals, now we're talking about individuals. The collapse of the institutions. There are no continuing institutions of the Jewish communist left or the Jewish left in Minnesota. The only institutions that have persisted are now atrophied, like the Jewish Labor Committee and the Workmen's Circle. So there really is no beginning point, in other words. Except we have some individuals like Lionel Davis and Mike Baker who have entree and who are still here. And there are others that Carl knows who are out in Israel or in the East or in California, things like that. So
most of these contemporary people don't have the roots in that period of the 20s and
30s. That's right. Lionel Davis is from Duluth, and Mike Baker is from, I don't know where, from New England someplace.
Chicago.
Yeah.
The decisive question is this, that unlike, for instance, the work of the IHRC in documenting the more recent immigrants, there has been no real effort made to document Jewish life, even in the sense of building integrally Minnesota collections, or more specifically, that of the working class movement.
There have been an effort at getting Jewish materials collected, but not at the IHRC, but the Minnesota Historical Society. Remember, there are a couple of gathering projects that were done, say, 15 years ago, 16 years ago, then again about 3 or 4 years ago. But these
projects... We need to examine those, too, and see what they have to say.
But they did not generate any kind of left materials.
And there is a recent organization of a
unless of the Jewish Historical Society, but whether that's...
They're not interested in the left.
No, they're more interested...
They're more interested in...
Filial pietism,
popular culture, artifacts, and stuff like that.
Few people in there, I think, have...
If we formulate a project correctly, and demonstrate its validity and essential character to any exploration of Jewish life in Minnesota, then we'll get some participation and support.
Well, it's possible that the article I wrote for the 75th anniversary issue of the American Jewish World on the Jewish left in Minnesota, which is very general, obviously, will generate some response, reaction, whatever. But that may give us some entrees.
The religious leadership seems to have been pretty transient too, isn't it? I mean, the rabbis come and go.
You start with Sam Dyer back in the turn of the century. He was there for 25, 30 years and was really a key individual. Then you got Minda, who was there for another 30 years, and then Max Shapiro. So in the dominant...
In Minneapolis,
the dominant one there, and there's been continuity. In St. Paul, in terms of the religious leadership, it's much more fluid, say, down here, the Vatican up there, right next to the Vatican, Mount Zion. They've had turnover about every 5-6 years. So that, but then on the other hand, the Temple of Aaron has had a continuous. They've only had two, religious leaders in their entire history. Bernie Raskus and the guy who preceded him, whose name I forgot. So,
are there archival collections of these organizations that have existed, both religious and lay?
Temple of Aaron has a marvelous archive. So that's the religious, community and its social institutions and all that. That's their archive is very, very good, and they're looking for someone to do a communal history or congregational history.
Well, I think we should interest ourselves in archives like that.
That's not the left, though.
These archives of this kind tend to reflect responses to the left.
And some left. I mean,
Temple
of Aaron people were, in fact, farmer laborites. They were, in fact, involved in the 1930s in the farmer labor movement, in that sense. But they were not left in the sense of left.
They were right.
They were the right wing of the left,
Well, the ultimate logic of the whole point here is that some of the best documentation of left history is in Citizens Alliance files on the Committee for Public Safety.
That's right.
With that thought in mind, let's in the project be looking at radicalism from the perspective and the attitude and the outlook of the opposition. How it was perceived. That's essential. In fact, I think we should interview people from the center and other about their experience with communism, for instance, in the 30s or 40s.
On your long list, you have some of those people, Carl.
I don't really have former Governor Stassen and Orville Freeman on that list.
But I do have
people who are more involved in left politics, like Doug Hall.
Yeah, but Stassen and Freeman are available, and would I'm sure that they would be willing to cooperate.
Yeah,
I know they would. Both of them.
Sure.
I think this discussion illustrates the
Stassen would
the kind of effort we need
if
to.
We have a drug testing.
I think there's another factor that the issue, say, of Jewish radicalism raises that I wanted to raise sort of in more general, which is what stance we can take towards primary materials that have been collected somewhere else. And what I'm immediately thinking of in terms of the Jewish radicalism question is the Oral History of the American Left.
That's right.
Collection at Tamament that Paul Buell has done, and I know that Paul has spent a lot of time in Miami Beach.
Paul has told me that anytime we want access to that, we can get it.
Yeah.
We can.
I'm not concerned about access. What I wanted to raise this question with Russ here. I'm concerned about resources. Can we count on transcribing tapes that have been done elsewhere and have not been transcribed? And I'm thinking, first of all, just out of this conversation, the Oral History of the American Left, some of that, the tapes are well indexed, though they have not been transcribed, so we would know which parts of the tapes are pertinent to Minnesota and which parts are not. And then, in addition, away from the question of Jewish radicalism for a second, there are these two guys at Madison, two graduate students, who've been doing a major oral history project on meatpacking unionism, mm-hmm. With support from an NEH grant and from Wisconsin State Historical and the UFCW. And they have, for instance, interviewed 15 people in Austin who were participants in the 33 sit-down. They have done extensive interviewing with people who were active at Swift's and Armour's. They do not have money in their budget to transcribe. And there appears to be somewhat of a sticky question about whether we could simply obtain dupes of those tapes, because Wisconsin State Historical at the moment is feeling kind of proprietary about it. But the researchers themselves felt that if we offered a let us have the tapes and we'll transcribe them, that that would lubricate access to the materials. But I think that, quite frankly, we're looking at a lot of transcribing.
Yeah.
And so I'm in part because I'm especially interested in meatpacking in Austin and so on.
Yeah, but the point is this: if the materials do in fact have a bearing on Minnesota,
yeah,
then I think that there is justification for trying to do that.
Yeah, I want Russ to understand that this is a big pile of work. You know, big backlog of work, let alone what we're starting to create. Well, for instance, 15 oral history interviews in Austin is all Minnesota.
That alone.
These guys turned up Sven Godfredson, mm-hmm. who was the first editor of The Unionist in Austin and then became the first editor of The Packing House Worker. He now lives in a little town in Tennessee. They did, mm-hmm. Dozens of hours of tape. They spent a week with the guy in Tennessee.
Wisconsin State Historical.
And they are, in fact, they are mailing me a 31-page summary of the interviews just with Sven Godfredson. And we should be able to tell from that, because he's a guy who was all over the map, and they're interested in a lot more than just Minnesota, but we should be able to cull out the stuff that is Minnesota-based. And I think that it's very important for our project that we have the resources to do that, and that we're willing and aware of.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff out there that's in different places around the country, and we do everybody a service to get it all under one roof.
Well, I think the starting point for this is a bibliographical one, mm-hmm. is to establish by a search where there are such materials.
That's right.
And I think we have already a general idea of where to look.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the principal places, I think, are Wisconsin Historic mm-hmm. Society,
mm-hmm.
Wayne State University,
mm-hmm.
Tamament Library.
There's the Oral History of the Left.
Yeah.
There,
it's part of NYU.
New
York City.
New York University, NYU.
Yeah.
At the Pope's building.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're receptive, Peter. We talked previously, Carl and I, about how transcribing is always an expensive item and a big item, too. And I think as we hone down the budget, we're going to go through the process of an expansive budget, and mm-hmm. we may have to cut it some. But I don't think that would be a major problem. Our rule of thumb, we have some excellent transcribers, about $1 a page. And we were probably talking about several thousand dollars before this.
Yeah, you bet.
We'll build it in the budget.
Very economical.
Whatever we can do to be selective.
We're talking about several thousand dollars just in transcribing what we generate ourselves.
Yeah.
No, that's right. Well, we know that's quality. But I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, let's think in terms of reviewing this whole subject next year in terms of budget and cost and potentials for going out to look for money. I don't think we should be thinking of grants now.
No.
But I think there's.
We open to the possibilities that if we begin to develop a project.
Basis for an NEH grant as we move along.
Yeah, not right now. We have to be working at it for a year or more.
But for instance, some of the things that have already emerged out of conversations with these guys is absolutely on my part, a total reexamination of the continuing role of the Socialist Party in the 30s. And that in fact, some of the leaders of the local in Austin were not, Ellis gets a lot of credit as the wobbly, he was really the only one. And there were in fact, Godforsen and some of the other organizers were continuing members of the SP. Which we often think of as being out of the picture after World War I.
Actually, the SP was a fairly active group particularly in the Twin Cities, through 36.
Mm-hmm.
It was in 36 and early 37 that it began going downhill, largely because of the incorporation of the Trotskyists. The Trotskyists really destroyed it. Really, broke it apart.
Yeah.
When the communists call the Trotskyists wreckers, most of the time they're using pejorative language, but in this instance, they were really wreckers.
For me, that's a case where looking at some new primary sources started to push me towards a very different kind of interpretation.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like good stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think if there's any problem with access, I think the society here can be helpful there.
The Hawkins papers gives a lot, illuminates very much the role of the Socialist Party in the period up to 1936. Remember, the Hawkins is pulled out of the Socialist Party when the Trotskyists came in.
Yeah.
And went to the Communist Party.
Does that come through, that switch?
Oh yes, it comes through very, very, very clearly.
Is it Madge or Oscar who's
Madge.
Yeah.
And she was the one that had the balls.
Make a real male supremacy remark about this.
That's on tape high.
Oh, it's not for public consumption.
And I think too that I hope that we're going to take a look at tapes that the society itself has that have not been transcribed, like the Ellis tapes
The Ellis tapes, the Sander Jenis tapes,
Maybe one of the first things that Mark Heidet could be asked to do is to go back through the society's own collections and pull and out and highlight out. And propose.
Right. And I think that's very feasible.
Yeah.
Early step.
Yeah. Sure.
I think that after we've defined our objectives here and made these 7 points concrete to at least the extent of a one-page outline on each, that one of the things we need to do is then to incorporate this in a discussion with the our liaison with the Historic Society, people from the manuscripts, audiovisual publications.
I talked to Debbie Miller yesterday, and I've talked to Mark Heidet, and they suggest we do that after the annual meeting, after the annual
Historic Event. That's understandable.
Which is the 11th.
Right around the corner.
Yep. Not that far down the road. I think
my inclination here is to suggest that each of you take this definition and purpose definition and scope, make notes on it, and et cetera, and let's come back to that and try to finalize that thing.
Well, I was going to say that reading over your definition scope statement, I see this being, you know, all inclusive and pretty comprehensive in terms of its what you say there, focus structures, structure of matter, focus and definition. We could build on it, but I think that it's basically there, you know.
We don't want it to be necessarily longer.
That's what I'm saying.
From the point of view of what it says, what it includes, and how it defines things. There may be some things that need to be included in it.
Well, the point is that this does not exclude anything. That's the point.
That's the first point about it.
Yeah, that it does not exclude anything. Even if something is not mentioned here in that one sentence on the bottom of page one, it doesn't mean that it's excluded. In other words, the Socialist Labor Party and the Delayanists are not mentioned per se, but if we get materials on them, we're going to use them, you know. So that does.
If we can get that broad definition worked out so we understand it and can use it as a basis for talking to others, then when we get down to these specific objectives, then working that over and enlarging on that a little bit, in fact, quite a bit. In a sense, these specific objectives need to remain general. Also have to look at that, whether it's a basic, a complete thing. All that is going to then emerge in a very specific and concrete program of work when we elaborate these seven or more points at the end. And on those I will try to draft essentially seven small memos.
Okay.
And invite suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the purpose, definition, and scope, I'd suggest, why don't the three of us reflect on that, and, you know, energetically, but I don't think we ought to leave that open very long.
No.
I think it's a good statement.
I think it's a good statement as it stands. I'm not sure that we can improve.
But if we have any ideas, you know, we can just relay those back to the
right. That's exactly what I said before. I don't think we can improve upon it.
Essentially, this is the basis for our first announcement in Minnesota History News.
That's right.
Any other ways.
Right.
And I think it should be ready before the annual meeting.
Oh, yes.
I agree.
Yes. I think it's almost ready now.
Yeah, I think he's brought it a long way. In that fourth paragraph, I just had a question on the full spectrum of the left wing, and you break that down into labor, farmer, ethnic, and political movements. Are there any other major elements out there?
There's a question of culture and the arts.
Yes, the cultural, the singing societies and the dance groups and the dramatic clubs and stuff. Stuff like that, which are always, in terms of the ethnic communities, an integral part of the, of the movements already mentioned.
Yeah, we can deal with that easily enough.
Yes.
What we have is the consideration from the cultural or the artistic side of the impact of the communist movement's activities, for instance, through the Committee of Independent Voters and groups like that, where they definitely were promoting a base among people in the arts and using it, and developing it as a political instrumentality.
Yes.
Now, there's a history of that in Minnesota, and there is also the question of artists and cultural people.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in that box up there, there's four election cartoons done by Sid Fossen, one of our most noteworthy artists. The number of people were developing proletarian left-wing theater writing, and other things. So there is that side of things. Even our most prominent Minnesota writer, Fakima.
Fred Manfred.
What's his alias?
Fred Manfred. Manfred.
Ah, yes, Frederick Manfred.
Yeah.
This I think belongs in here. The impact of the left and communism. The centennial left-wing publication. Yes, definitely.
Well, we should try to get McGrath and Fikema as part of our group to interview.
Meridell Lesueur.
Meridell Lesueur.
That's another problem.
As she ages, she becomes a more important literary force.
That's right.
Yeah, well, she's important not only because of herself, but because of the stuff that she has.
Yeah.
Those tapes she had are just invaluable.
Yeah.
And we've already assigned that to.
Yeah, well, I'm willing to undertake that.
Yes.
I can be helpful on that because I'm on real good terms with Ken now because he's handling some of the legal stuff.
Well, that would be it. We'll get together.
Yes, yeah.
This question of the arts is the one thing that's bothered me.
Yeah,
good.
I think that is
important. Good. Impact on economic, cultural, and social life does not quite cover it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, can we just add that, say, after ethnic?
Sure can.
Let's get a sentence in there, or a clause that includes that. I think that the dissertation that Colette is doing on working class theater is going to be very important.
Yeah, except that her focus is going to be increasingly on New York, or with little emphasis on Minnesota, if for no other reason than it's easier to get access to stuff in New York,
I tried.
And in Minnesota, a dissertation you want to finish fast.
But there's no doubt that we're willing to collect scripts, whatever, and hopefully even paintings, if there are, great.
Yeah. Yeah. We have... You see awesome paintings already.
What's his name? Very celebrated lithographer.
Adolf Dane. Adolf Dane.
No, in the local scene in Minneapolis. That's the wrong word.
Is he still around?
Yeah, right. He's one of the cultural elite in Minneapolis. I'm sure he is. The cartoonist artist. Engraving?
Engraving? Yeah. Lithograph?
Yeah.
Silk screener?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's consider this the next to final draft then and work on it a bit. And, look over the specific objectives part. I didn't think we should start to spill those out in any more detail. I found that you couldn't begin to enlarge them a little, but they just went away from me right away. So what we need is the essentials there. On this point four, the working conference. I think we need to project that this fall, even though I think it should be held next spring. It may actually, in a way, become the kickoff for things.
If it's going to be held in the spring of '87, we have to start planning it now.
Right.
Okay. You know.
That's essentially going to be a meeting of our associates with us, if we accept that notion of structure. I mentioned to High that I had a proposal for that conference, which I think is a rather important question to determine early on. I'm suggesting that the guest speaker, keynote, whatever you call them, should be the best person we can get from Canada to discuss Canadian radicalism in terms of the specific experience of the Canadian Commonwealth Federation, the Communist Party, taking it basically from the birth of the Commonwealth Federation through the New Democratic Party of Canada. It gives us a focal point for a comparative look at an area which is probably more like Minnesota than any area in the United States. It should be from Winnipeg, from the Winnipeg perspective and not the Regina perspective.
Do you have someone in mind?
No, I don't.
There are some people who are working in this.
I'm going to Eau Claire for this Northern Great Plains.
Right.
And I've incorporated a guy named Nolan Riley, who is in Winnipeg at the smaller of the two universities.
Right.
One is the University of Manitoba, one's the University of Winnipeg. I can't keep them straight, but he's at the smaller one of the
Winnipeg
two.
In Manitoba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
where
he is
Winnipeg is a smaller one.
Okay, that's where he is at. And he is a labor historian. Primarily interested in railroad workers, but I will broach the subject with him this weekend. Does he know somebody?
Find out if there's anybody who's doing work on the
Because he, in fact, he's coming back with me and spending a night before he goes back.
On the Commonwealth Federation.
Let's find out who was doing.
Who has.
The only one I could think of when Carl asked me about that is Ken McNaught at Toronto, who's been working on radical history.
Yeah.
If he's the old, but I don't know what specifically he's working on.
There's one guy who's gotten quite far along on Croatians and radicalism in Canada, but he is himself Croatian, so it's a very much just a Croatian focus.
We need somebody who will give us the broad historical background of events and some kind of rough evaluation of it. Winnipeg is the twin city of Minneapolis. No two cities anywhere that I know of that have so comparable backgrounds.
Exactly.
And that is useful. And certainly the Commonwealth Federation is a significant type of parallel development to Minnesota farmerism, laborism, North Dakota nonpartisan leaguism. And the New Democratic Party of Canada is an interesting alternative solution to the kind of dilemma that the left wing faced in the 50s and 60s, and became the home of the dispossessed communists who were prepared to go off to the right instead of the sectarian left.
It was a successful version of the American Progressive Party, in a way.
Probably, yes, in a sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Except they're slightly more left of where the Progressive Party ought to have been if it was if it was developed. If that strikes us as a
good idea.
Way to introduce a comparative perspective in our work, it may not be the last place, but to introduce a comparative perspective and to develop some thinking on other than lines that American historians have already begun to create. Because I'm not sure myself that there is any historian in the country that we would care to set the keynote for us. Because we're trying to explore new approaches.
Well, the one other thing that I would suggest, but I'm pretty sure that he'll be out of the country, would be Dave Montgomery. I don't know if you've seen this piece that, this book, Working for Democracy, that Buell and Dolly have edited at the University of Illinois Press, and Dave's piece on farm laborism. But I think that
bad piece. It's wrong historically, conceptually bad. When I see him, I'm going to blow him out for it.
Then maybe it wouldn't be a good choice.
No, he isn't too enthusiastic. No, what Dave did is try to do something without any
research.
That screwed it up.
Right.
Why did he do that?
He asked him to do it, so he did it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. But we are thinking of that this conference would be primarily an in-house kind of thing rather than a...
It's literally on the problems of theoretical history.
Yeah.
It should get into the status of things, the need-to-know question, what is it we're looking for, major themes that we need to develop, and the recruiting. Mm-hmm.
But my guess is the kind of
people
scholar. Oh, Dave would be great. Just because he laid an egg with one water doesn't mean that we should.
Yeah. But I mean, we're not trying to have something, some finished products to present to the public.
No academic papers.
Great.
No presentations from that point of view.
What is Dave?
People can prepare.
It's a whole year.
I know it's a whole year, but their year doesn't...
I don't know.
Long,
We can find out.
Yeah. What we need to do is to try to get some people to begin to think and come there with ideas about the status of the work in this area in different particular areas of fields.
Yeah.
And let everyone get their teeth into that kind of questions.
Yeah. But it strikes me as... That would be a good occasion to bring in Paul Buell.
Occasion
to bring in these two younger guys Madison to talk about what they've done, what problems they've run into.
People around the country who've been, you know, actively involved in doing something like this could be brought in.
And people such as Montgomery, you identified who we know are working in the field. Pratt and
Bill Pratt.
Harvey Clark.
Harvey,
Bill
come.
Yeah. Emory is our other source.
Yes, where the Draper papers are located.
Yeah.
That's a very important place. Yeah. And Stanford, the Hoover Institution. Let's not overlook that.
Yeah, I met the librarian from there. I think he's a chief librarian, at least an important one in Berkeley this summer. We recruited him for our network of Finnish American archives. Yeah, that is undoubtedly the richest unmined collection of information on the subject in the country.
And outside of the country, there's the Institute for Social History in Amsterdam.
Mm.
A lot of stuff there.
Mm.
One of the problems with this project is that we don't overreach ourselves.
Yeah.
No, keep in mind that these are places that we, in the United States, we know.
Even within the United States.
Yeah.
That's why the question of careful definition of organization is so damn important.
How about our friend who works near the Kremlin? Remember that Russian scholar, Vladimir Pechetnov?
Oh,
he's going to write something on the farm of labor. Right?
Yes, he's at Moscow State University. What's his name? Vladimir is his first name, I know that. I have his address.
We could send him.
Yeah, except that, remember when I asked him, to look up some things for us in the Lenin Institute to find some things in the whatever common term records are still available. He looked at me and he said, we have no access to that. You remember that?
There's a score of things to talk about, but let's put some of them off down the line a ways. I think we should focus on the structural question. How are we getting ourselves set up and when are we going to get going? So, in terms of the personnel on this thing, I think that's rather important. Well, first, we have a suggestion of a project director and a research associate, Mark Hayden. Peter questioned the selection of Mark for this because of lack of knowledge or experience in the field.
Actually, I think that's a fair question. It's a fair question.
And so this has, I'm not sure we have any better proposal, but I think primarily what we need at the moment is someone who serves the functions of a good administrator and coordinator.
Mark can do that.
And
yeah, he's excellent.
Yeah, Mark can do that, and also do the kind of searching that we need to do, like getting together what there is already in the audiovisual collections of the society and so on, things like that.
Yeah. Well, let's, in a sense, make him, at least for the moment, a bibliographer.
Yeah. What, I take it, what you'd like to see, Peter, is someone who's more versed in the subject.
If there is someone, yeah.
Yeah,
I think that the most important thing really is that that there be someone identified within each of the departments who is going to be interested in this. And so having Bonnie or Tracy or, you know, having them plugged into this is probably going to pay off more, at least the first stage, than who the actual research associate is.
I agree. I think that to select somebody from the Historic Society staff is at this point a great advantage.
That's correct.
And we will find, I hope, other formal or informal research associates, people who work with us.
Yeah.
But for the administrative kind of thing, I think we need it. See, I'm a rotten administrator. Need a good administrator, associate.
You were the head of YCL, you must have been a great administrator.
I did well where I had good.
Well, you brought us this far, Carl.
Org men.
But you would be.
Conceptually, I'm very good at this thing, but administratively, I'm not that good.
You'd be prepared to say, you know, he should be spending X number of hours a week on this. I mean, that's, I think,
that's important.
That kind of commitment.
Why don't we suggest a number of hours? What do you think it needs?
I'd like to see somebody do it half time. Because it also, then it gives it a feeling of significance.
I think that's feasible.
I think half time is probably, at least initially.
Yeah. 2 days.
Two and a half days.
And I think he should begin to be part of.
Part of the group, here.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in on our interviews, but you know, on our business.
Right.
Well, we can do that.
I guess my other question is Mark really interested in doing it?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt of that.
Great.
He has the interest.
Great.
I haven't talked to him, and I don't.
But we can ask him that question too. He's somewhat like you, Peter, involved in a couple conferences. I think he's going to Northern Great Plains. He's working up to the annual history conference. He has a couple of administrative tasks there.
Mm-hmm.
So we may not be able to wire him in until after the 11th.
Sure.
That's
2 weeks away.
No problem, sir. Then I see.
Fine.
Okay, then, again, on the concept of things, a very strong and working liaison with the 7 departments. I was writing this down. I couldn't remember Dick Cameron's last name at the moment. And,
did we say Jim Fogarty for that one?
Well, I think Carl raised a reservation, maybe Peter did, about Jim. There would be a question the extent of Jim's interest. He plays it pretty close to the vest. And I think you're. Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you.
Sure. I think your question was, you ought to state it, Peter. The degree of interest? Or?
No, I had found, I have a great deal of respect for him and his skills and the work that he has done nationally with oral history. And But I found that of all the people that I have had contact with at the Historical Society, he had the most rigid sense of what a professional historian is and what work should only be done by professional historians. Mm-hmm. And I feared that that might get in the way
of outside people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then also because I was aware that both Dick Cameron and Hamp Smith have been doing some collecting. If that's what right. We primarily want that person to be in the role of is the collecting role, I'd be more comfortable with one of those guys rather than with Fogarty.
Well, Dick's a good choice, I think. Mm-hmm. Dick or
Hamp. On oral history, I think we need to develop our relationship with the audiovisual department in that area. Yeah. And in relation to this, we're talking acquisitions primarily yes. of manuscript sources.
Right.
I suggested on the basis of what Peter was saying, I thought we didn't want anybody who goes by the book, so to speak.
Well, that's Jim.
Jim goes by the book.
That will cramp our style, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, we have high standards. I'm not the least bit worried about us dropping our standards about what we're doing.
No, we have higher standards.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're unorthodox.
I thought that of the people suggested that Dick would be a good choice.
Uh-huh.
Primarily from my point of view that I have a congenial relationship with him mm-hmm. over quite a period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's important.
The same, by the way, is true of Debbie Miller.
Yeah, yeah. I think everybody's enthusiastic about Debbie.
Yeah.
Audiovisual, either Bonnie or Tracy, I'm equally, and I think really the question is their interest and their time.
I think, you know, what we have to do is determine whether these people have an interest.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
That's the important
yes.
thing.
Exactly.
You know,
and we'll put the question to them. I think we can raise that question in this initial meeting after the 11th.
Yeah.
Right.
And then have subsequent sessions.
Have they been spoken to yet, any of them?
Debbie has, Mark has, Dick has not. Bonnie's aware of the project, but she hasn't spoken.
But Debbie's response was, I'm sure she was enthusiastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I think you'll get a very enthusiastic response from all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think the Bonnie-Tracy question is a good
question. Is
who's more interested?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I don't know Bonnie. I don't know Tracy at all. I don't know Bonnie.
I know both.
Compared to Little.
Both real
people. My only question is if she's so deeply involved and strictly in administering things that she doesn't have time to do this. That's the problem of an in-charge person in a department.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
now, are there other departments
that's open. There's a question mark after her name.
That we should be concerned about?
I can't think of any. Can you?
If we're looking for grave sites, go to historic sites. I don't think so.
I suggest how they cheer then.
I've been redoing some of the archaeological historic sites work myself.
Okay.
Like there's an archaeological find, a gravestone in Hainelow, which is the suburb of New York Mills. This communist tombstone with a hammer and sickle. That shows what the Orthodox religion of this guy was. Fascinating. Anyway.
I just wonder, in terms of individuals, I've had such a good relationship with Dallas Lindgren that it might be worth inviting Dallas to participate at the level that these other folks.
Dallas is interested in kind of radical labor history for a long time.
Aren't there two different kind of things there? Isn't Dallas as knowledgeable about the present?
Existing collections.
Existing collections.
Perhaps more than anybody else.
Perhaps, absolutely.
Probably that's true.
Dick has probably more experience with acquisitions.
That's right. They really are different. I would like to propose we include Dallas.
Dallas, I think, would have the intellectual curiosity too. She's kind of a frustrated teacher.
I have thought I was thinking of her a little bit. We have some very intricate questions because we're going to require documentary materials. we're going to, in a preliminary way, catalog and organize them and stuff like that.
Yep.
We need to do it according to standards and procedures of the manuscript research department over there, and do it in a very integrated way, in fact, get them to do some of the work for us. That's a big kind of a department over there.
Yeah.
I think she's also more research oriented.
Yes, she is.
Oh yeah.
And you guys are perceptive about Bonnie. She is more of an administrator. I think she'd immediately be interested. Mm-hmm. But it could well be Tracy has a greater degree of interest.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
We have unmarked sandwiches.
Well, we'll look at some.
But they're supposed to be three beef and one ham.
We need to record this part of the events.
It's not only unmarked, but it's also sealed. So we.
One ham. The ham is marked.
Oh, the ham is marked. Okay.
We know these
what
guys.
Is the this is the radio.
Makes no difference makes to me. Difference. I'll take the ham. Great.
Okay.
Is that just an interruption? Or are we about to
We got some plenty of time.
I'm good. Just thinking, Peter's.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Okay.
Before we leave the gravestones, we can constitute a historic site subcommittee and have them review the offer of the Elmer Benson Home, which.
Let me just a short digression. My wife and I took a little vacation trip this summer and went to Mineral Point, Wisconsin.
Oh yeah.
And we're just so depressed at what the Wisconsin Historical Society is doing with those workers' homes. Everything is wrong what they're doing. And the thought that here was one of the few places I can imagine coming across where mm-hmm. there is working class housing from, in this case, the 1830s, yeah. that what you could do with it, and they're not. And if there is somewhere in Minnesota where we could indeed mm-hmm. develop a site that would allow us to do some of that, I think that would be a terrific addition okay. to the project.
Yeah, well, the railroad workers' homes on Milwaukee Avenue were turned into yuppie.
Yeah.
But
maybe Benson's home is a way to get at some of that.
This raises a much bigger question, folks. The relationship between this project and the Labor
History
Center, etc.
That was going to be my next question.
Did not suggest any liaison with them because I don't know what to liaise about.
But well, nobody knows that. It's in the process of formation.
Right.
The point, of the matter is that that in their statement of objectives, which was adopted last year, they do state that they are a or will be an institution that will look at the history of the worker and his institutions, and as a consequence. It is not exclusively focused on the organized labor movement. So that's at least as far as they've gotten on the statement of objectives.
Yeah. The question, I guess, is first of all, that we have plenty to do without trying to solve their problem.
No, I mean, I think we should go ahead.
But there is a relationship.
The relationship. I wouldn't worry too much about the relationship at this point because I think that they are. Unclear as to the totality of their activities, whether they will be exclusively a kind of a showplace of artifacts and a meeting place, or whether they will also generate research projects and research activity. That and to what extent there'll be a mix, that's up in the air.
Right. That's why, in relation to the question that just came up of historical sites.
Yeah.
I think we should collect the material culture of the working class left.
Yeah. Surely, and give it to them if they want it.
Yeah, I think that's going to be very
not
hard.
A major thing.
It's going to be hard to define until they get a professional in charge of that place. You know, the I think the law states that Dave Rowe's task force goes 18 months from July.
From July, right, right.
And I think it's going to be pretty much a Dave Rowe-led effort.
Until then.
Though he confuses some of his task force. But it does call for appointment of a director then, by the director of the Historical Society after 18 months. So in a way, I think we're kind of biding our time. But I think we ought to be open to see how.
In the meanwhile, the best way to have a liaison with them is through Haynes.
That's
and
right.
that since that's we're right. already intending to incorporate Haynes in some way, I think that's our best bet to keep an open line of communication with them. He definitely is.
They have a lot of, I think, grand ideas that aren't going to come about, and it's primarily the governor who keeps pushing the National Labor History Center.
That's right.
And I think in one of the meetings they said, yeah, we ought to get the papers of the Teamsters, the National Teamsters. And I think it was Lila Goff who said after, she said, oh, that, she's being facetious, but she said, oh, that'd be wonderful. Then we can really find out what happened to Jimmy Hoffa.
The main thing I think right at the moment is that we've selected here the proper departments with which to develop liaison.
And
we can, as need arises, work with anybody else in the society. Okay. Well, Russ, I think, has to help finalize those things.
Right.
And then we have to see in the process of work how we incorporate these liaison people into the structure. I think the next point, see, I have second thoughts about almost everything here at one time or another. On this project planning and review committee, you know, I'm inclined to change the nomenclature here a little bit on the concept of the organization. I think that we should have a project administrative committee or some other title of that kind. In other words, it's the ongoing working leadership of the project. And I think we should compose from among the project associates, including